This is CICK News. Watsa is not a traditional horror film, but a short film production by House of Copper Films that tells an ancestral story of the River Otter people through the Somaliach language, subtitled in English. The film, made by and for the community, is told through the stories passed down from elders. Filmed in the historic North Pacific Cannery, the short film explores cultural memory, language revitalization, as well as a supernatural legend, while also making waves on the festival circuit from Vancouver to Hollywood. Directed by Dustin McGladrey, produced by Rosie Johnny Mills, and written by Dustin McGladrey and Jeremy Paul, this short film captures viewers immediately with its lush, dramatic scenery of the cannery and keeps you guessing until the end, all the while teaching you Somaliach, the language of the Tsimshian people, and my first interviewee, Wil'uq Batsgagala, or Jeremy Paul.
Jeremy Paul is English name. Wil'uq Batsgagala is my true Tsimshian name. And I belong to the community of Hartley Bay and the Eagle Clan of House of Tkatkwak.
Can you start by telling me who is Watsa or what is Watsa?
Watsa is a transformer. They are a shapeshifter. There's been so many stories about this supernatural being, and Watsa literally translates into river otter in our language.
I'm really excited because what we're talking about today and why we started the conversation there was because that's the title of a horror film. So can you tell me just a little bit about how did you get involved in Watsa the film?
I was talking to a couple of filmmakers, Rosie Johnny Mills and Dustin McGladrey. Rosie's from the Haida and the Cowichan Nation, and Dustin's from the Nisga Nation. They were working for Knowledge Network at the time. They wanted to do like a mini doc through the First Peoples Culture Council on language revitalization. So we talked about that, but that project never got off the ground. But we became fast friends. So it was like, oh, we should do something, right? So we got to talking, and like Dustin had heard my music, and we got to talking about what the songs were about. And then, we got to the song Watsa, and I told them what inspired it. And they were both just, this has to be a film. it has to be. And from there we got, it's like a real modest little budget. We had a skeleton crew, and we really pinched some pennies to make it work. All of the people that were working on this film provided massive discounts on their work. Mm-hmm. And all of them are very good at what they do, obviously, but all of them really believed in the project. And we're all so glad that it was able to be done and that they were so generous.
Yeah. Is this the first ever Somaliach language horror film? And then also, can you talk a little bit about the significance of where you filmed it as well, at the cannery?
Yeah, for sure. To my knowledge, it is the first. It's the first of its kind. It's the first like creative non-documentary film that we've ever had that's totally in our language. We filmed at the cannery because one of the stories that I'd heard that inspired the song has to do with that cannery. And that comes from a story from my grandpa, who, when he was a kid, used to stay there with his mother and our family. His older sister, he used to go visit, who was at North Pacific. And my grandpa and his mom were staying at Sunnyside, which is like few kilometers the other direction, or further along the tidal portion of the mouth of the Skeena. Inverness Passage is where it is.
Okay.
And I guess one day he was walking between the two canneries, and there's a railway line that goes in between them. It's the quickest path to go between the canneries. So he used to walk that all the time back and forth when he would visit Rosie. And he said that one time it was dusk and he noticed, like he felt something wrong. So he followed his instinct and turned around and saw that there was a man following him on the railroad tracks. So he got spooked. He didn't know who it was. So he ran, and when he looked back, there was no person anymore. There was a river otter slinking along the railroad tracks. And he got to the house there and burst in the door and told his mother with his face what he'd seen, because he wasn't able to talk. He was just in total shock and horror. And she just told him, like, what her instinct was. And she was like, oh, you saw the Wutza, didn't you? And he was like, yeah, she just knew. So that's the part of the film where it gets to the song, and that's where that lyric comes from.
A really neat moment is where your character and then a Japanese man and another character exchange, like, a kind of sort of a stilted conversation where you're sort of like miming what you mean, but within it you learn that the Smalyach word for foot is the same as the Japanese word. So is that, how did you learn that? Or is there a lot of crossover between the two? Because that's it's a really cool teaching moment, actually, in this very short film.
Nam sebasu.
Asi o itameta.
Sipke sin, arikula deplait kakwa, asi.
Asi, demo daijoubu. Chawan o wasureta.
For sure. Yeah, and that's in my day-to-day, I definitely am working with the language a lot, and one of my special interests that hasn't been like documented before is the relationship between the Japanese language and Somaliac language. And I only know about these things because of the canneries. So yeah, talking to old timers and them being like, oh yeah, like they have the same word for foot. And then there's like also a landlocked head that is now a trout, but at one point in history was a salmon that has the same sounding name as our word for sockeye, which is maso. Mm. And their word for that landlocked salmon is masu. Mm. So there's this kind of phenomenon that linguists call cognates. So there is where it just happens to sound similar to another word in the other language that by language family is completely unrelated. But the, yeah. My argument is that there's too many cultural parallels. I just learned yesterday that like Japanese people have wailers, like wailers that can go to a funeral to cry, to get people going, to get them to release their tears, and they're paid for that service. And Tsimshian have the exact same thing. There's a bunch of those like little parallels where I'm like, oh, it's not just a coincidence. So, and it's a small snippet of the film, but I just really wanted to just throw that in there. That's like a little special interest, like personal research project.
Yeah, you're like, it seems like such a good vehicle too, because you're part of this new generation of artists and storytellers and like language revitalizers that are re-engaging in Somaliak language through your work with the Tsimshian Culture Society. Do you feel this like excitement or this growing interest, or are you seeing like this result where there are more speakers and you're finding yourself more enveloped in the language? And I guess how does the film then just settle into that nicely?
Yeah, for sure. I think Kelly, who also starred in the film, gets to see a lot more of that firsthand because she is a Somaliak teacher at the high school. But I get to hear about all these keeners that are just so pumped to embark on this language journey and to know that there's people of all walks and levels of fluency that can come together for this common goal, and that number is growing. That's really nice. It's really nice to know.
Yeah. Lastly, so tell me about who some of these film festivals are that have showed interest in Wutza.
Yeah, we're gonna have the film screened at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland, Vancouver Horror Fest, which is coming up in October. There's another like horror themed film festival that is in New Brunswick that we're going to be at, and then one in LA. That's like the theater. It's cool that our film is going to be showed in a theater that's a block away from the stars on the sidewalk thing in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's pretty damn cool.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and for sharing the film with me for me to be able to see it. It was very cool.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So stoked to that you had me aboard on the show.
Next, I spoke to the director of this short film and major film buff, Dustin McGladrey, about how it was made and the unique challenge of telling a story that lives. A story that simply cannot mean one thing to all who know it, as was the case with Watsa.
My name is Dustin McGladrey. My Niska name is Kind-Hearted Grizzly Bear. I come from the Niska Nation, from Gitlahtamix, Nuayanch. My clan is the Grizzly Bear Clan, or People of the Hawthorn Bush, and I come from the House of Shtain. I am a director, a writer, and I'm also a film editor. I went to UBC and Capilano University for about 5 years of schooling, and now I work in film, television, and all that stuff. Just lots.
Thank you so much for making time to speak with me. The film that we're speaking about today is Watsa, and I wonder if we could actually start just by you telling me what the legend of Watsa means to you.
On a metaphorical and spiritual level, it's reclamation of our stories and our oral histories and translating that onto screen. That's huge to me. With any oral histories in Adauk, people are going to have their own interpretations of what it means. So I don't want to say this is what the movie is. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that would be my answer for what's it is. It's just important to get these kinds of stories onto screen. And one of the things that we talked with some of the elders, maybe Jeremy talked about this a little bit, some of the elders were worried that we were going to tell this story in general, invoking that spirit along with many other types of spirits. It can be dangerous work to do, even just telling those stories. But for us to actually depict one on screen and have a human be that supernatural spirit, it could be dangerous. But we explained in a way where it's like we're trying to translate oral histories onto screen. This is the new oral histories that we're doing right now. And that's the way we do our work in film. We treat it like it's a potlatch. I've talked with Gwai Edenshaw about this, where film is potlatching. The ceremony is done when it's done. All the work that we put into it, it's a lot of work that we have to do. And it's all work that we've done in the past. We're just doing it now. You know what I mean?
What has this looked like in your career of kind of, are you seeing a resurgence or a reclamation or even more interest from maybe the public and non-Nishka, non-Shimsian people that want to know more about language and these stories? Are you seeing that in your work?
The short answer is yes. The people that have heard about this project, they want to see it. People in general, are trying to learn our languages. I'm trying to learn my language as well. I want all of the opportunities that other languages have. I want that for our languages. Like these films that we make, what would my little kid self want to see? You know, they want to see themselves on screen. They want to see their languages on screen, see how cool they are, take ownership of identity. And film and media is one way to do that. So I think that this Indigenous Renaissance that we're in, especially on the West Coast, is starting, and we're going to see more films with our languages on screen. It's so important that happens.
I think that's the interesting thing about film as a way to capture a living language, something that is like, it's because often it's like, what if you have to retake? What if you have ADR? That must be a funny line to straddle for you as a filmmaker.
Yeah, it's very, in a way, it's freeing because I guess I'm Niska. Jeremy's Tsimshian, right? Mm-hmm. But our languages are so similar. So when I was in the edit for this, when I heard like the elders' different takes, I could still stitch it together because I understand the language. I know what he's saying. So it wasn't that hard in that respect. That's where positionality comes in, right? Indigenous people need to be telling Indigenous stories. We can't have non-Indigenous folk come in and tell our stories. That doesn't make any sense. And this is proof of concept of that. So when I'm on set and listening to the elder give these different takes, yes, I'm stressing out in the moment, but I know it's going to be okay.
It's an impactful but short movie.
Yeah.
But it actually goes through these arcs of, oh, I'm supposed to feel comforted. Now I'm supposed to feel uneasy.
The music even sets the tone right away. Like, okay, this is supposed to be eerie. You're supposed to feel eerie. When you have the lighthearted moments, especially when the Japanese starts getting spoken.
Yeah.
That's fascinating to me as a filmmaker, seeing that kind of like cultural fusion. I think we had a lot of fun making this film and looking forward to making more like this. Telling a Dawak is something that I'm really passionate about. I'm excited to continue.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
Watsa is not available for audiences just yet, as it needs to complete its festival circuit first. But stay tuned to House of Copper Films production company for updates and when you can watch Watsa with your family and friends.